Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town Podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Every Town Podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Hello, everybody. Haven't recorded one of these little intros in a little while, but we needed to let you know that the live show is this Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we hadn't announced a movie because it was supposed to be the Stannies. It's not the Stannies anymore. We are doing, if you're a fan of the show for a while, we've called it Passion of the Crites, Critters 2, the Easter Spectacular. We're doing it this Saturday night. So join us, patreon.com/IHateHorror. Also, we have our t-shirt pre-order ending soon, so get your orders in on before the 14th. All right, goodbye. Thank you. Enjoy.
John and Joe, another episode ready to go. They're gonna talk about the good and the trash and anything in between. Cherishing make-believe, get ready for Halloween. It's the horror show. I know you miss those guys. Tune in and find out what's on their list tonight. They butcher and dissect, take apart and mutilate. Listen to your two favorite brainiacs communicate. It's the horror show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horror Show. Show dissects, mutilates, dismembers, and butchers all of your favorite and not so favorite horror movies and other horror-related events. I'm Sean.
I'm Joe.
Hello, Joe.
What's going on?
Not much. Before we kick off this episode, pre-orders for the t-shirts close in 2 days, March 14th. So get your orders in, ihatehorror.com/pre-order, or just go to ihatehorror.com. You'll see the link for the Brimley drop. And if you're a Patreon member, you get 10% off of that. And that's it. Oh, and we have a live show coming up. I think, when this drops, it's this weekend. This shit always confuses me. This Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have a live show. The movie, TBD. We're going to talk about that a little later in this episode. Or
wait,
maybe at the
beginning. Our live show is the 16th?
Yes. Or is it not?
Okay. It's Aussie news to me, but.
Well.
I thought you said the 23rd for some reason.
The 27th is April's. The 23rd of March is, that is a Saturday, but no, I have it in for the 16th, unless you want to do it on the 23rd.
If we already said the 16th, keep it.
Okay. I think we've mentioned it on other episodes.
I have no grounds to argue.
Because we've been talking about the Stannies, which are going to be pushed to April now. Because of Paul. No, not because of Paul.
He thinks a lot.
Because of me. So the 16th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So there's some things we can talk about besides the movie, which I'm sure everyone's thrilled about. Sleep Stalker 1995 is what we're talking about today.
Hey, who chose this? Why did we do this?
Boy, I tell you what, the things we do for donations to charities is wild. I'm going to pull up this fella's name here. Sleep Stalker. This is Andrew. Oh, it's Andrew. I don't know how to say his last name. It's like a goat. Goat Chiz.
Oh, yeah.
He's been a good listener guy. For a good very guy. Long time. He chose Wishmaster 4. He had three choices. Wishmaster 4, and this was all because he donated to like a race I was doing. Wishmaster 4, in which he said, "I'm sorry," in parentheses. We did not do that. Eden Lake, which is a good movie. it's a good movie. And then Sleep Stalker, 90s made for TV quality horror movie that apparently was supposed to be a Nightmare on Elm Street spinoff at some point.
Okay.
And that's how we landed on Sleep Stalker. I can't imagine this was supposed to be a spinoff. Seems to be its own terrible movie.
Well, for sure. I like that this and Wishmaster Part 4 is like cut from the same cloth.
I know. One thing I'm going to say, I loved this era of movies. This 93 to 98-ish genre of movies was just... I love them so much. I don't love this one so much, but I love this era a lot.
Can I make the claim that I simultaneously think this movie is horrible, but also better than I was expecting?
Yeah. I would agree with that for the most part. Again,
honestly, the villain, whoever played the Sleep Stalker, is a piece of shit. That was, in my opinion, some of the worst acting I've ever had to sit through.
He's brutal, and he acted in a lot of stuff, that guy. By the way, the cast is very weird too. The cast is very weird, and we'll get into that. But Sleep Stalker has no business being above an hour and 20 minutes.
Hour and 40 minutes. Good God. Have we ever covered a movie that could have used an editor more so than this one?
No. And really, with an editor we're talking about a different movie. I might be singing this movie's praises with the right editor involved.
Yeah.
I might be like, this is a hitter, a little secret hitter. Instead, it's not, because the montages and the fucking... just the bullshit that you have to sit through to get to the Sleep Stalker, which is not his name. He is the Sandman.
The Sandman.
So I don't know why they didn't just call him the Sandman, or the movie The Sandman. But here we are talking about the movie Sleep Stalker.
The movie opens with literally 4 minutes of a man walking through sand. Unbelievable. Like that sets the tone right off the bat of what you're about to be in for.
The orange hues in this are outrageously fucking...
Yes.
So much orange light bulbs. Using more orange light bulbs than the band Nile.
Nice. Have you seen Nile? You ever seen Nile?
Yeah, it's on Nile.
Nice.
I don't think I enjoyed it, but I think they were fine.
You're good.
Sorry, I was just basically slurping into the microphone.
Paul and I saw Nile, and then we paid some man $5 to hammer a nail into his forehead.
As is the case when you see Nile.
Is nuts.
Wait, before we get into this, although we are already jumping into it sort of a little bit, I was gonna say, we'll save it till the end. We'll save our rants to the end, because we got a bunch of stuff I want to cover. I want to cover what movie we're gonna do for the live stream and Stanny stuff we can do in the Patreon. But I think that's it. I thought there was something else. But let's save that till the end, and then that way everyone, you know, who hates our rants can turn it off.
Hey, you know what? That actually, you know, speaking of rants, that reminds me. So I always highlight negative reviews, you know, that get left to us, mostly because I find it funny and yeah. I like watching you squirm.
Yes.
I do want to say the past week, we've had an influx of just reviews in general, and they've been overwhelmingly positive. And like, I know it's funnier to focus on the negative, but like, I appreciate you guys that are leaving them. Like, so they're so nice. Everyone that's coming in.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, what's weird is I literally was thinking about that today while I was
getting ready for the show, I was like, hey, we should probably like shout out the people that actually like write nice yeah. things about us and like say their fucking names and stuff, because like we only do that for the people that are awful and will not listen to the show to hear us talk about it.
Yeah, that's why I want to highlight. Like,
meanwhile, we got people that are like, you guys are
taking time out of their day.
Fucking great. So we appreciate you all. Thank you so much. That is true. All right. We'll get into this movie and then we can derail at the end. But the 90s, as I mentioned, is one of my favorite eras. And this era in particular had this bizarre string of fantasy, fairy tale horror movies from like 93 to 97. And they are so fucking weird. And they captured my imagination always. So 93, you have Leprechaun, which I think is what set it all off.
Sure.
It had to do with that. Because that's nuts.
Yeah.
And it broke that mold that you usually see where like when something, you know, like they make one type of movie and then like six come out at the same time. Nothing came out that year or in 94 that was similar to it. It was just Leprechaun. But then the influx comes. And then 95, you get Rumpelstiltskin. 96, and then I guess Sleepstalker, if you want to throw that in there. 96, Pinocchio's Revenge. 97, Jack Frost. 97, Wishmaster, if you want to throw that in there. A Jin?
I do.
Jin?
Yeah. I do.
Yeah. 97, another one that I forgot about this one. Snow White, A Tale of Terror with Sigourney Weaver and Sam Neill. That was another one. And then I would even throw in, and you can you can definitely disagree here. In 94, I would argue 94, you could include Mary Shelley's Frankenstein with Bobby D.
Because that's the monster.
It was,
that's nuts.
But it was more about the book, right? It wasn't like Universal's Frankenstein.
Right.
Put that in the maybe. Anyway, okay, here's another one that you can agree or disagree. I don't know which one you're gonna be more mad about. Because neither of them are work.
Wolf. I knew you were gonna go with that.
Wolf, a retelling of, you know, that rocks. Anyway,
Wolfman, yeah,
and that
fucking Jack Nicholson.
And then one more that actually more fits into the category, but also doesn't. Brain Scan.
Well, Brain Scan definitely.
Even though it's not a fairy tale or anything, it is like this weird fantasy creature that like same vibes, given the same vibes hard.
Yeah, and the theme that they all have is that their main character is just an annoying, obnoxious piece of shit, which, like you said, started off by the leprechaun.
You know what? That is it. That is it. And like giving them catch 22s. Like, ooh.
Wait, is that the right phrase?
Catch 22s? Catch 20. What's this, a book?
No. Catch 20. No, yeah, it is a book. And catch 22 is a phrase.
You can't use it as like
catchphrases?
As a noun.
I mean, you could.
Or wait, just, no.
I'm just saying, I don't think that works.
Is it an adjective? I don't know how I'm using it, but anyway. I don't see why not, but you know, whatever.
But getting me all flustered.
Catch
22. Like, catch 22 is like, I just don't know. I don't know how it applies there. But
boggle your mind. Anyway.
It's like a person can't get a job without experience, but they can't get experience without a job. You know, that doesn't apply to a trickster.
Well, yes, it does. No, they're like, ooh, like. They're like,
I'll allow it.
If you kill somebody, I'll kill you. But the only way to survive is to kill somebody.
Okay. Okay. You know what? You won me over.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? They like do trickster things like that.
This is exactly what Joseph Heller had in mind when he penned the Catch-22 novel. Hey, you know what? I know we've been giving Buzz a lot of airtime, but this guy's ruined my fucking life because Sleep Stalker, the entire time, I couldn't help but sing it in the Crossfire commercial theme song.
Oh, which, shit.
You know, Sleep Stalker, which that's all the fucking kid did for anything that was a compound word. Up until like this year, he was still doing that. So.
Absolutely. That song rocked, though.
Well, that song's good.
It was ruined.
Yeah. Because you're singing Piss Bucket. I was carrying around a gallon of other people's piss.
I can't get into it, or else I won't stop. But that's the most mind-blowing fact to me about the whole thing. The piss blocker and everything. The biggest issue for me is carrying a 5-gallon bucket of other men's piss around. And not room for error. No room for error.
Filled to the
fucking
brim. And singing a jingle while you
like one of the seven dwarves. A dwarf carrying around a bucket full of all the other dwarfs' piss, singing piss
whistling
bucket.
While you work. Yeah. Oh fuck, that's good.
That's really funny. Okay, that one got me. All right. We will come back. Let's keep fucking. I don't know how long this. I can't guarantee how long this episode's gonna be, but let's keep going a little bit. All right.
Okay.
This cast is abnormally large, larger than it should be. More characters than necessary.
Mm.
And you got Michael Harris as the Sandman. You don't need to go into it, but he's just been in a lot of like one-off TV shows. He's been in movies and stuff. You got Mark McClure in this, who he plays the dad for 3 seconds in this movie, but he was Jimmy Olsen in Superman. He was Marty's older brother in Back to the Future, and he was also in Apollo 13.
Yeah.
So he did well. Jay Underwood plays Grown Griffin. He was Bug in Uncle Buck.
He was Bug, and our buddy Mike from ADAT, probably the biggest Jay Underwood fan of all time, because he's Chip and almost or not quite human. You know, the Alan Thicke TV movie.
Oh, yeah.
Classic.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's in The Boy. Nobody loves the movie The Boy Who Could Fly more than our buddy Mike. So.
Is that true? It's funny, because when I saw those names, I was like, what the fuck are those? What The Boy Who
Could Fly? Dude, Mike had like multiple VHS copies. In like 2007, just an arm's reach at any time,
just in case one wears out. I'm most intrigued by Jay Underwood's performance of Sonny Bono in a little movie called "And the Beat Goes On: The Sonny and Cher Story," and it looks like the most low budget biopic you've ever seen. And I think I need to watch it, because just imagine that guy playing Sonny Bono. Like that guy doesn't have the acting. Like, biopics are, you know, like, they're intense, right? You're taking on a famous person's life.
Right.
You want to be respectful of these people that you're portraying. I need to see it. It looks
insane. He's the Human Torch, too, in Roger Corman's Fantastic Four movie.
Oh, is he really?
He is.
The guy had a weird career, huh?
He sure did.
You got Ken Foray. Foray?
Yeah. Foray.
He's a detective in this. He should have a much larger part, because he appears to be the only one that can act.
Without a doubt. When he showed up, I was like, oh, thank God. And also the scene that he's in was like the most I was amped up about watching the movie.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Yeah. And then yeah. He must have owed somebody a favor, you know. Daysworth.
Peter Vasquez shows up for a little bit here. He's most notable for Ramon in Fire in the Sky, or Raymond. Fire in the Sky. He also got two episodes of Unsolved Mysteries, which I thought was interesting because one must have been like a follow up. You know?
Yeah. Good for him.
If you were an actor on Unsolved Mysteries, you were just praying for that follow up episode. You were praying that guy, whoever you played, was going to come out of the woodwork and kill again, just so you could get that follow-up episode where you're like, guess what? This guy came back. So he did that. He's in this. He plays a guy named Dog, who has so much screen time, way more screen time than is necessary, and for reasons unknown.
See, is Dog the character that keeps saying
the gangbanger?
Using the word gangbanger.
What are you going to talk about? I'm going to talk about that term a little bit.
I've never heard that term used so much in such a short amount of time.
All right, so forget it. Wait, let's talk about it now. But wait, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back talking about gangbangers. All right, we're back. All right, so why in the 90s, why did everyone use the term gangbanger instead of like gang member? And I know, you know, Joe's I'm trying to say this without making you sound insane. You've invested some time researching gangs in the past.
Okay. Sure.
Why were we calling them gangbangers? I felt like gangbanging was something different.
It was only people that looked like Peter Vasquez and talking to somebody that looked like Jay Underwood that used that term. Like, you know, people like my dad that would use that term. It's not something that was like...
Within the community.
Right. Yeah.
It was just people like idiots on the street being like fucking gangbangers.
Yeah. Dude, should I call Sin Loke right now and ask him? I bet he'd pick up.
He would. Especially because it's like 6:48 over there.
Yeah. And even more so because he has nothing else going on.
Well, then that also does not put his phone on do not disturb at night. Just leaves it open. I don't know. It drives me nuts. And it was a huge thing in the 90s. It was just always gangbanger. That was the term you always heard no matter what.
Yeah. It pisses me off. It does. I don't like the way it sounds.
It's fucking insane. Well, yeah. And it also now is a fucking sex thing. So.
Well, yeah.
That doesn't help it.
Yeah. I didn't think of that part. No. It just sounds so unnatural.
Maybe some of us. Remember also, I feel like this was a 90s thing, gangbangs, like the massive the
sexual acts,
huh?
The sexual act?
Yeah. No, the gang, no, I'm just calling it that. No, I feel like in the 90s, or maybe it was the early, no, it had to be the early 2000s, like internet age, where it was just like, everyone was talking about like, 80 people gangbangs and stuff. Remember that period of time?
I do. I think it had to be like when online porn.
It was just, yeah, like, when everyone was like, oh, everyone's collective head exploded that these things existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Man. I mean, they don't. You know. they don't.
All right. A few more here because it's interesting. Directed by Turi Myers. Looked him up.
Candyman 3,
Wrong Turn 2, Leprechaun 2, but most importantly, Chairman of the Board, he was the writer of.
The Carrot Top movie?
Yes.
Nice.
Besides that, though, he also wrote the stories for Smallville, Stargirl, Griselda and Vampire Diaries. So he's the producer on all of those shows as the executive producer.
The recent Griselda?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So isn't that nuts?
He's doing well.
Yeah. I was shocked. So, and because I saw him as the executive producer, I was like, that's crazy. How did he get involved in that? Then I saw he was like the writer of the stories or did the screenplay for the first one and then got the EP credit. And I was like, that's good for this guy, man. Turned it around from this movie. That's...
You know, sometimes people are just trying to find their footing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is your first couple of goes, this and Leprechaun 2.
And this one was a, I would say, is this, I don't think this is a total miss. I think he was onto something, but it was just executed wrong.
Yeah. Again, I think if you had someone different playing the titular villain,
right,
it would have helped a real lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's for sure. All right. That's it for the cast.
You don't want to highlight our boy who plays the young Sandman?
I didn't even look at him.
Deputy Winston himself, Giuseppe Andrews, plays the young Sandman in the flashback scene. He has his mouth sewn shut.
Deputy Andrews?
Deputy Winston from Cabin Fever.
Giuseppe no Andrews fucking is the way. Actor. Get
yeah,
the fuck
that's him.
Out of here. Yep. Are you serious?
Yeah, man.
That's fucking nuts. Wait, what's that guy's real name? Giuseppe?
Giuseppe Andrews, yeah.
Holy shit. That just blew my mind. Wow. Do you think we should have a category for...
Stannies?
In the Stannies for best... What would it be? Not a glow up. But, like, the best turn it around. The best, like, turnaround. Because this director, I would probably... He would probably be at the top of the list for going from this to writing all those fucking shows.
I like that category. I'd have to look at...
It'd be hard.
...our list.
I know. So I was actually thinking about this, so we could talk about it in the Patreon, but when we talk about it, I think we need to start, like, tracking some of these during the... Like, after the episode airs, be like, here's the categories we're going to keep using year after year. Like, just start fucking throwing names in there, because I've been categorizing them, and it's been exhausting. To go back.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare.
But we'll go over that. All right.
If I look distracted, I just found that Giuseppe Andrews directed something in 2004 called Who Flung Poo? It's about an artist named Poo who paints chicken pot pies with the excrement of homeless people.
I like this movie. That, Giuseppe makes a movie.
I mean, are these porn? He's directed like 150.
He's directed 150 movies?
According to Wikipedia.
Come on. What are we talking about?
I mean, I'm rounding up. It's probably like, you know, 35, but.
Joe, anything more than two?
Yo, that's what I'm saying.
It's like, nuts.
Look at this. It's
avant-garde.
They're called like garbanzo gas, cat piss.
Yeah, Zoo Dung Zero? What are we talking about?
Wiggly Harris.
Pregnant with a swastika? The fuck? It's on Letterboxd.
Sex Ed. I mean, yeah.
It's a horror movie, I guess. Wait. Oh. Giuseppe plays Bob Dylan during the writing of the book Tarantula, who lays an egg containing the ultimate woman. Hey, somebody needs to do a wellness check on this guy.
Yeah. Well, he, I agree. He's disappeared from the public eye since 2015.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine why. Fucking nuts. Cabin Fever 2, Spring Fever. That might be something we need to take a look at.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Spring is around the corner. Ty West directed it.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Let's do it.
That might be going on the... I think we're going to have to do that. All right. Well, we're doing everything but this movie.
You said we weren't going to get distracted.
Listen, guys, we have an hour to fill. It's sometimes you just know too, cause, like, this is a movie heavy on montages, heavy on running around, talking blabbermouths, bunch of blabbermouths.
Yeah, I mean, after this opening scene, when we see Griffin grown up, we watch him serve coffee in like real time to customers.
Unreal. But we start out with a kid afraid of the dark and horny parents, a tale as old as time. While the parents are busy trying to get frisky, some guy just appears in the doorway. We hear screaming. We also get some like cartoon punching sound effects that were like, wah, wah, wah. The kid naturally goes to go check on his mom and dad, and they're dead. We see the Sandman pouring sand on her. This guy's voice,
it sucks.
I wish I had it up, because I wrote down a couple of quotes and I was like, I need to remember what he sounded like when he said these, because it was so dumb. His voice was so fucking stupid, but I can't think of it. But in this scene, he's like, good night, Griffin. And you're just like, oh, this is not going to be great. And then...
Dude, he's in the jail and talking.
You've been a bad boy. The sun is out. This guy sucks so fucking bad. And also, the worst villain. The worst fucking villain, because he has a very specific goal, and he does everything in his power to not get it done. Especially given the powers that he has.
Well, okay, this opening scene, he is supernatural. He has like sand powers, and he escapes through the window, but then we find out he has zero supernatural powers because he's about to get them after this scene.
Yeah. So, but he does have them.
During the scene?
Yeah.
I'm very confused.
Because he flies out the window like sand.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have them. Because then the voodoo priest shows up afterwards and gives it to him.
But, so, here's... Yeah. Well, I mean, listen. We're going to dissect something that... If we talk to this guy, he'd be like, yeah, man, I don't know. I was just trying to fucking make it work.
Could you imagine approaching Turi Meyer with that question?
But guys,
listen, buddy.
Fucking kidding me? I was just trying to get my foot in the door. But okay. Yes and no. It's weird. I feel like he shouldn't have powers yet, but he does, because he is the fucking Sandman. He's pouring sand on the woman. He gets thrown through a window like sand, but then he's also killed. Or no, he's not killed. He's shot and arrested.
He's shot, yeah.
But then he's later executed.
Well, yes.
Supposedly.
Okay. So, during this scene, he does not have supernatural powers, even though we watch him fly out of a window backwards to escape the police. And then he gets shot, and he is jailed, and he's on death row, and he's scheduled to be executed.
Yes.
But then the voodoo priest comes, who he knows and who we see in this opening scene because he's watching from across the street, and he gives him powers. So
no, see, I don't think that's what happens. I think the voodoo priest has always been involved with his life, because the voodoo priest is like, you have three lives to get this done. You have to kill Griffin. You got three fucking lives to do it in. Because then after he's executed, by the way, it's not right after he's executed either, so it makes no sense. But later we'll see the priest be like, you lost one life, you only got two more. Like, you better fucking kill this Griffin kid. You know?
So Wikipedia's blurb is like the smallest thing I've ever seen.
It's so small.
But it's, which, you know, finally, like, why would anyone invest time writing on this plot? But it says here that when he's in jail, the minister, he's allowed a visit from a minister, and it's the voodoo priest, and a hex is placed onto the Sandman so that when the execution is over, his soul can travel to a new body made of sand. But all his blood relatives need to die. Why is he trying to kill his blood relative in the beginning, in the opening scene? Because spoiler alert, Griffin's related to him.
I kind of liked that reveal at the end.
I mean, at least they tried to do something. Right? At least they tried to connect something.
Yeah,
I'll give them that. Yeah,
they kept you wondering. No, they didn't. You didn't wonder once during the entire movie. I mean, at the end, you were like, oh, all right.
They watched Halloween 2 and were like, we gotta fucking do that.
No, this is what I'm saying. None of it really adds up. Which is hilarious. I love that we're just gonna talk about the end of the movie right now. Which is hilarious because at the end of the movie, Griffin is like, hey, you saved me when I was a baby. Why do you want to kill me now? And all he can say is like, children are crying. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, you actually should have cut that out just because it's like, oh, you should not have brought that to the viewer's attention. You know, like that glaring, that glaring question where you're like, wait. Yeah, why would you want to do that? And he's like, spooky shit. And you're like, okay, the fuck are we talking about? Yeah, no, none of that makes sense. None of that is explained, really. Talk about the priest and this guy just talk so slowly and so dumbly. You can't even make out the words they're saying.
Both of them suck.
It's awful. So, back to this part. Sandman chases him out of the house. He gets shot in the desert. There's so many desert scenes in this. It's so funny. I would love to know where this is supposed to take place because it might be like New Jersey.
Oh, it's LA.
Oh, it's
no, it's LA. Yeah.
17 years later, Griffin is a grown man dressed like a fucking asshole.
Dude, like peak. It's so bizarre because that was like the epitome of 90s hipster, but we were around during that time. I never saw a single human being dressed like that in real life.
I think it's like, yeah, I think it's I'm trying to think about how to explain this. There's some fashion trends right now, right, where you'd be like, that's a fashion trend, and you'd see it in a movie, and you'd be like, that guy's dressed like an asshole. And you see it once in every, like, 300 people in the wild, and you're like, and everyone is like, look at this fucking moron. What the fuck's this guy doing? You know what I mean? But it's, like, technically the style of this generation. And you'll see it in movies and things, but no one wears it. I feel like that's what this is.
I would agree, because I can't recall anybody.
I don't even know what that hat is called, because it's not a Kangol.
It's not a Kangol.
But it's like an XL Kangol, but also with like a, the flap is not connected at the bottom of it. It's fucking insane. It's an insane headwear.
Must have went to that same store that that person did.
The asshole story. I almost wrote that joke. I almost wrote that joke down. Good old inside joke for the show. Oh, man. Well, Griffin is now a writer, I guess.
He
and
he's a freelance writer.
He's going to interview Dog Sanchez for his gangbanger piece. And he tells his girlfriend or not girlfriend, I could not figure it out. Because at one point she's like, you should date more. I was like, what? I guess I've misread this entire situation.
I think in this scene, like the coffee shop scene, he refers to her as his girlfriend.
Mm. Okay. Maybe that was
but a... Yeah, there's some, not a couple.
Jokes. A couple jokes in there, I guess. Anyway. While this is happening, the Sandman is sitting in jail singing the same song that he's been singing. Don't know what it is. I don't think it's matters. And it's not the Sandman song. So if you're thinking that.
Yeah, why wouldn't
you? It's some other fucking song that makes no fucking sense. Also, Michael D. Roberts plays the preacher. Mm-hmm. This guy's credits are unreal. He's been in
Rain Man.
He's in A Star Is Born. He's been on every TV show known to man. It's crazy. He's still working. Well, maybe not. But the dude has just been all over the place.
We should say after that first scene when the Sandman is shot, he's just standing across the street, hanging on the like, leaning against a lamp pole, and he has cataract eyes.
Yeah,
the police officer who shot the Sandman makes eye contact with him, and for some reason does not deem it necessary in an act of crime scene to be like, hey, maybe I should go talk to that guy
who watched the entire thing play out. Yeah,
at least get a statement. Let alone being the most suspicious looking person he's ever seen.
Okay. I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. I don't know why people don't like our tangents. They're fun.
Fuck them.
No, listen, I'm not going to stop because it's literally the funniest part of the thing. You have to be a fucking idiot if you don't understand it. You sit here and take Sleep Stalker seriously. Ooh. A real dissection of Sleep Stalker. Give me a break.
Dude, honestly, what we said earlier about like presenting the director with a dissection of this,
yeah,
like changed my life in that one moment. What are we doing? That's kidding me? Imagine sitting down with that guy being like,
well, like,
talk about the underlying themes.
You could talk about that too with like the way some of these people come up to them at cons and are like, hey, you know what I mean? And it's like, give these guys a break. You can love these movies, that's fine, but don't be like, hey, what was your inspiration for Sleep Stalker? Hey guy. My inspiration was I wanted to fucking eat.
That's it. Yeah. I'm sorry. What was it? I interrupted
you. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Rant. Yeah. Hopefully that's not too negative and critical or whatever that guy said. Narcissistic. So this dude, Michael D. Roberts, plays a preacher. He has just been in fucking everything since like the dawn of time. He was in Good Times. He was in Beretta, Incredible Hulk, BJ and the Bear, Sanford, Bosom Buddies. And let's skip ahead. Airwolf, remember that fucking show?
Airwolf?
Yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Night Court. So he's been in like every generation, Doogie Howser, MacGyver, skip ahead, Seinfeld, Beverly Hills 90210. But all of these friends, the Michael Richards, Michael Richards show.
When he was a bumbling cop?
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yikes. I guess what I was going for here is, he's only in like one episode of each of these, like almost all of them. Girl Meets World, he's in. He's in only one episode each. Is that a flex or is that not? Like, would you go around being like, because I feel like if you're in one episode of like one or two shows, you can't go around being like, hey, I was in.
I would, 1000%.
But I think once you hit like, 50? The 70s, 80s, like once you do it in two decades, I think you can do it.
Yeah, dude. You're a journeyman.
Yeah.
That's where you are.
Yeah. Then I think you could brag. Then I think you could be like, I was on all of these shows. And you don't have to tell them it was only one episode.
Yeah. You know? No, it's a flex.
You could just be like, I was in this. Then you can do that. You can't do that when you only have like 2 one-episode credits on. Like, I was in Friends and Seinfeld. I mean, and they'd be like, what the fuck? That's crazy. Who were you? I'm like, oh, well.
Well, see. I do think you could say that. I'd be like, because those would be cool. But if he was just like, I was in BJ and the Bear and Bosom Body.
Okay. Fair. But like, it's also crazy. Like, as you could like mock this career as much as you want. But at the same time, this motherfucker has been around everybody.
Exactly.
Like everybody that's had a name, this guy has worked around, which is crazy. Also, I just realized he's in 33 episodes of Beretta. That's.
Oh, wow.
Robert Blake, the Robert Blake vehicle. Huh. It's the man that killed that woman, right?
He for sure did. Yeah.
Was that the one the Jinx is about? Where he like threw her down the stairs and then like recorded himself pissing and was like,
dude,
remember that time I killed my wife?
that was fucking nuts. How's that real? Just admitting crimes while you're pissing. That wasn't him.
No, it wasn't. That was crazy. Remember that? That was news. It was like, hey, by the way, this documentary aired last night and he admits to killing this woman in an active court case.
It happened during the filming. Like, wasn't he doing that documentary
right.
to prove his innocence?
Yeah. He like took a piss and was like, man, it was crazy when I threw my wife down the stairs.
That's fucking nuts.
Oh, fuck. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back to Sleep Stalkers. All right. We're back. Did you figure out the name of that guy?
Oh, no. I was reading about Robert Blake. Dude, his mugshot was taken in 2002. I have never seen a poor looking picture in my entire life. Also, he was acquitted.
Oh, really? How did he kill his wife? Why are all these guys killing their wife? Just fucking relax. Go get a fucking divorce.
She was shot in the head while sitting in his car.
Oh, wow. Just
parked on a side street. And Blake said that he went back to the restaurant to collect the pistol that he left inside. And he was not present while the shooting took place. That's actually fucking insane. What an excuse. Holy shit.
Oh, that gun that she was murdered with? Yeah, I was going back inside to get it. So it wasn't me.
But they did determine that the gun that he left in the restaurant was not the murder weapon.
Okay, so I was just thinking,
crazy.
How fucking genius would it be if you know you're going to be the suspect, so you're like, yeah, my excuse is this gun. This is my gun that I went to go get at the restaurant. So it's not me, because this is my gun. But in reality, you used another gun.
That's honestly, I'm like speechless. That's such a wild series of events.
Yeah, the other guy was Robert Durst.
Robert Durst,
admitted.
Have you seen his 2021 picture?
Yeah, I did. It's not fucking great.
What the fuck?
Jeez.
He's dead, huh?
Yeah, R.I.P. No, okay. R.I.P.
No, fuck. Wait,
what am I saying? What can it say? Maybe. I don't even know the story, so maybe I don't know. Who knows? TBD. TBD on the RIP.
No.
He's good. He's good to say no. No RIP. Okay. I don't know. I don't know enough about any of these things that we talk about, so when people get mad, I just, hey, listen.
Fair.
I just know what I know. All right. Anyway.
Hey, listen, if you think that we're on a real, real off tangent. Nothing's happened. Like, we're not really past the opening scene. But calling this a horror movie is such a stretch because so few people get killed, and this guy just has one goal, and it's to kill Griffin. And the very few kills that we get are like off screen or no gore, right?
Yeah.
And this movie's an hour and 40 minutes long. So to have that few amount of kills, that little amount of kills in a movie that long, there is so much filler. So don't blame us for this.
And three of the kills actually come like within the same moment.
Yeah. Yeah. When he enters that house.
Yes. And there's just three quick kills and you're like, okay, this is picking up. And then that's it.
That's it. And then he's just trying to get Griffin.
For reasons unknown.
Which then Griffin. Okay. So we can talk in detail about the kills, but
sure.
Griffin then goes on the lam because he's the suspect, because nobody believes that a Sandman is responsible.
So let's preface that too, because Griffin's roommate dies first. Then the Sandman breaks into his girlfriend's house, kills the girlfriend's roommate who they're friends with, and then kills the cop that Griffin has reconnected with from his childhood event. And is like, hey, we should go. I should go show you crime scenes. I should show you the body of the guy we executed. He's doing this with Griffin. That guy dies. And now Griffin is like, everyone's like, well, of course it's fucking Griffin.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in this movie's defense, they didn't do this correctly, but he is a perfect suspect for that. Mm-hmm. Like he shows up being like, hey, remember me? You said you'd protect me if the Sandman came back. And then the guy's like, get the fuck out. I just killed him. I just personally executed him.
You want to see the body? Take some and show them.
And then Sandman killing. So that's when we already mentioned the minister shows up before that and puts the hex on him. So he gets executed, but his soul's alive and takes the form of sand.
Right.
For some reason, he has 3 days to kill Griffin.
Right.
Or he's banished to hell for eternity.
Right. But you were talking about this in the sense you were mentioning that he was a suspect. You're about to talk about something.
So now he's a suspect, which the Sandman doesn't kill his girlfriend because he tries to, right? But she's in the shower and the sand just melts. The water just washes the sand away. Like washes away his fingers. So she survives. The police show up. They see the murders. And Jay's like, it wasn't me. It was the Sandman. He has to go on the run now. And now he is a prime suspect. He gets picked up like pretty quickly. And then we have to watch him get interrogated by Ken Foray. And there's like a good cop, bad cop routine.
Yeah. Which Ken Foray is great in that, but
he is.
We're already at a point where we're kind of exhausted.
No doubt.
So it's not a great time for this to happen. I understand, but they've wasted so much time getting to this point that you're just like, I don't care.
I agree. You know what I just thought of, and this happened, I think, a little bit earlier, but who is the guy playing Five Finger Filet with the knife? You know, when you stick the knife between your fingers?
Yeah, I don't...
Who was that guy, and have you ever seen a slower version of that game? Like, that guy's fingers were not in jeopardy of getting poked at any point in time. It was fucking nuts. And the camera's focused on him for like 5 minutes of real screen time.
It's not the roommate, right, that dies?
Can't remember who.
Also, during this period, Dog Sanchez, that gangbanger that he's interviewing, will just randomly show up and like talk to Griffin and be like, you gotta fucking smoke this fool. And like, that's it. And then disappear.
That scene was insane. Literally just shows up and be like, hey man, if he blows up on you. The fuck? You're telling that to somebody that looks like Griffin?
Like calling Griffin a cholo and stuff like that. It's fucking wild.
William Holmes an essay.
and then leave it. And like Griffin has also been like, hey, I'm being chased by the Sandman. He's like a monster. He's like got powers. And Dog Sanchez, it does not appear to affect Dog Sanchez at all. He's like, just shoot that guy. Like, what the fuck are you wasting your time for?
Oh, yeah. Doc Sanchez believes him.
Yes.
Like, he believes he's being chased by a monster.
Yeah. But it's also like, you find him before he finds you. That was his first piece of advice. He's like, listen, here's my advice. You fucking chase him and you go after him harder than he's coming after you. Never once is he like, okay, buddy, like, you're fucking nuts. He's like, you gotta kill this fucking guy, man. Like,
yeah.
And every time he sees him, he's like, you still haven't fucking done that yet, man? Like, what the fuck's wrong? But, like, why do we need these scenes? We don't need these scenes at all. Dog Sanchez.
Dog Sanchez is the most useless character
of all time.
Possible.
Which is amazing because then he also randomly shows up to fight the sleep stalker. While they're in, like, a underground tunnel of some sort.
That tunnel is nuts.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, because, okay, let me find out where we are. So, also, can we just say, when the special effects, when Sandman shows up in that house and kills the roommate and the police officer, are not bad for 1995 and whatever budget this movie is. They do a CGI sand guy.
Yeah. It's not great, but it's not bad. It's not bad.
They also do a great, they also do some bad special effects. My favorite one was when the Sandman chases Griffin out of that room after they, like, come in and find those guys dead. He chases Griffin outside. Griffin gets in his car. And then the Sandman does the, like, Austin Powers going down the stairs, like, to like, lower from, because Griffin's in the car. We're in the interior of the car, the camera, and we're looking at the Sandman from outside, and you like, see him kneeling down, like, you can see him. But it's like the Austin Powers going down the escalator thing. You're just like, this is fucking painful to watch. And one more thing that we kind of skipped over during those scenes that cracked me up was when the cop is alive and has taken Griffin back under his wing and suddenly decided to show him crime scenes and dead bodies and evidence. He takes him to where the Sandman and the preacher lived. And he's like, all this occult stuff is fucking crazy. It honestly was so close to Danzig's review of The Library. Yeah. It was so close to that. Because, like, Griffin picks up the mold of this thing that we had seen earlier, which is just a cross. It's a cross with a blade at the end. And Griffin's like, whoa, a cross. Which, like, that's the least whoa thing I've ever heard. But then the cop's like, that's not what it is. And then he turns it upside down and he goes, turn it upside down. And it's a satanic symbol. So, what are you saying? It didn't change the shape. It's just an upside down cross.
That's actually so funny.
Hey, buddy, turn that around. It's actually a satanic symbol. Fucking nuts. That scene killed me. All right. Woo. All right. So, Sandman, where are we here?
Ken Foray is interrogating him. And
does Ken Foray. Does Ken Foray in that interrogation throw a little shot at the Mangler, which was also 1995? So, probably not. But. He says, he mentions machines killing people, and I just, first thing in my head, the Mangler.
Yo, the first thing I remember that line. The first thing in your head was Mangler. The Mangler. I thought Terminator, but, you know.
Oh, well.
Mangler's a way better option.
Now that I'm thinking of it. Honestly, when I wrote that down, I was like, what else could he be fucking talking about? And now in my head, I'm like, this has been a thing for a very long time. Okay, I take it back.
No, I know. I'm doubling down on Mangler now.
Okay.
They're probably shooting on rival lots.
You never know. You never know. You know what? Here's all I'm going to say. Perhaps perhaps Robert Englund had an offer to play the Sandman.
Hey, our guy Andrew said it was supposed to be an offshoot of Nightmare on Elm Street, so.
Yeah. There we have it. Maybe there's something to it.
You've cracked the case.
Finally. Everyone could sleep tonight knowing we've solved the problem. So yeah, he's being interrogated. Did you have other things to say about that?
No, I was just going to say our guy Griffin is rescued from Ken Foray's police force by his girlfriend, who pulls out the largest gun I have ever seen in movie history.
Oh my God. Yeah. The guns are fucking huge in this.
It was just a pistol, and it was honestly Looney Tune size. It was unbelievable.
That's Megan. Dude,
Mike and I were actually just talking about this. We were at a party in the Bronx, and we knew like nobody there.
I remember that, yeah.
A huge brawl had broken out, and we were just sitting on the couch while people were getting literally plates smashed into their head, and this kid pulled out a gun that was... It was honestly like the Joker's that has the flag that says bang. It was just a pistol, but the barrel was like 12 feet long, and Mike was laughing so hard that he was going to throw up. And like, this was a very real dangerous situation, but Mike laughing so hard was making me laugh so hard. And we got up and left and walked through the melee as the guy was aiming at the sky. And we just walked out like, you know, belly laughing, like holding each other up by the shoulder.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it was.
I don't think I could have laughed in that situation. Although, I don't know. Mike makes you laugh. When Mike laughs...
Mike was laughing so hard.
You can't help but laugh. Oh, boy. What else happens? Lots of Sandman dreams, lots of bullshit. Sandman, Griffin gets locked up in a psychiatric ward where the Sandman gets in by coming out of the sand of one of those fucking public ashtrays that have sand. He's born from ashtray sand.
Yeah.
But the sun comes out and he's like, I'll get you tomorrow night.
What's like, why? Why does it have to be dark?
Why does this guy not just like kill him?
I know.
No, I was going to say he turns into sand and just goes up the HVAC unit.
I know. Can I just skip ahead for a second?
Yeah.
We watch an hour and 35 minutes for him to succeed. He fucking kills him.
Yeah.
He kills Griffin at the end.
Yeah.
So like, why are we watching this?
Yeah, that was shocking.
Because again, ruining the end of our own episode, then the Sandman dies. So all of this is meaningless.
My biggest issue with that is that that's an issue, right? But you could frame that in a way where it works, the way we're talking about it, is like, my issue is somehow Megan, this girlfriend, who has been just a side character, has done, we don't know anything about her other than she's a photographer. That's it. This has been a focus on Griffin and Griffin's story, and everything is about Griffin. And then when Griffin dies, that's not the end of the movie. Like, we then have to watch Megan be the hero through the end of the movie and finish the whole movie off. But you're like, what the fuck? I don't even know who this person is. It's not satisfying. That's my bigger issue. Like, yeah, like Griffin dying is dumb, but like, you, if that were the very end of the movie, okay, fine,
that's fine,
everyone's at peace, whatever, but
since they decided to kill him,
having 20 fucking
minutes, why couldn't they have just done it in the 900 instances that Sandman was in the room with him, just appearing out of vents and stuff?
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back to wrap this up. Although we just did. All right, we're back.
Well, before we get to the finale, Griffin's like, hey, you know what defeats sand? When you turn it into glass.
Which, by the way, he had to learn from the police officer. We had to get that explained from the police officer. In the early scene when they're like looking around, he's like, look at this. It looks like he's got a glass blowing thing. You know, sand turns into glass. And you're like, oh my God, what? Do you really have to fucking spell that out for us? Like, you know the ending now. Yeah. And then, which, to your point, it's hilarious because Griffin doesn't just do it. He like says it out loud.
Right.
He's like, wait, I think I remembered something. My hero, my mentor taught me that sand can turn into glass under heat.
My mentor. He's talked with him twice in his life. 27 years apart.
Oh my God. It's fucking great. So Griffin, he gets out of the psych ward. We learn after Griffin escapes, oh my God, this was like 20 minutes of my life that just didn't matter. Griffin and Megan, his girlfriend, just running around for what felt like an eternity. Nothing happening. And then them being like, ultimately saying, hey, we're going to find the preacher and talk to him. Now, what we've seen of the preacher, he appears to be a very supernatural being over the Sandman.
Correct.
Someone that you would not just meet because he has the means to just not be around.
Right.
The moments we've seen him, he's been alone or isolated or like checking in on the Sandman when he's doing his shit and just kind of coming and going. And when he is the preacher for the execution at the jail, it seems like he's connived his way into that. You know what I mean? It's not, right. you can feel it. Like he like tricked them into getting into that. So you're like, what? How are you going to find the preacher? Oh, they do. They just walk through the fucking sewers. And then they're like, hey, preacher. And he's like sitting on a throne in the sewer. What are we doing here? Fucking the preacher. And the preacher tells us, oh, but yeah, that's the other hilarious thing. The preacher could just kill these people.
Right. Well.
Well, he wants, well, I guess, does he want the Sandman to succeed, though? I don't even know if he does or cares.
He does. He does for some reason. Why? I'm not really sure, but he does.
Yeah. But also, just leave. Like you don't have to entertain these people because they show up and they're like, tell us about the Sandman. And he's like, okay. And then proceeds to tell them the entire
origin story. The entire origin story. That's fucking nuts.
And we see the Sandman as a kid. He has his mouth shown up. And his dad was abusive. And it made the Sandman crazy. And he eventually kills the Sandman. Or no, I'm sorry. He eventually kills his dad. Sorry. Sandman kills his dad. And then the preacher reveals, big reveal, you are, because he had a little brother who was a baby in that scene. And he said, that's your brother. The Sandman is your brother. And you were adopted. And that is why the Sandman was going around killing families. Because he was looking for Griffin.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And again, to Joe's point that he pointed out earlier in this episode, did he have the powers? Did he not? What is happening? How was he executed if he has these powers? Why did he stay in jail if he had these powers? I know the powers sort of came from when he stabbed himself in the hand in the middle of the desert at the jail cell, but like also he had the powers before.
He did. No, he didn't, dude. He was just a serial killer.
But how did he get out of the window?
He's a fucking nimble, you know?
No, he's not fucking nimble. He survived a gunshot.
Yeah, that's not unheard of.
All right. Why did he think he was the fucking Sandman? Why was he carrying...
He's a fucking idiot.
I hate this. Mouse I hate this so much. Anyway, the Sandman shows up and starts chasing them again. Huge chase scene. Lasts fucking forever. Dog shows up. Dog Sanchez, again, he shows up. And Sandman enters his mouth and like shreds him from the inside out, which is kind of fucking cool.
You know what? Not bad.
Not bad at all. And the chase keeps going. Griffin turns his hand into fire, or turns his hand into glass using fire, as Joe mentioned. That's all he gets, though. He only fucking glasses up his hand, which the Sandman turns into a sword. Knife. Yes. Giant knife. And finally, we get our face-to-face, Griffin and the Sandman. That's when Griffin says, "You kept our father from hurting me. Why do you want to kill me now?" And anyone watching was like, wait.
Yeah, why?
Fuck. Why'd you point that out? And also, do you have an answer? He doesn't. He's just like, children screaming. And you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, not even like a, I need to do this for the preacher. You know what I mean? Like, nothing. Anyway, Sandman turns his hand into the shank, stabs Griffin, kills him. But Megan is here to save the day. Another chase scene. Which... somehow she tricks him into getting into a giant furnace for some reason. And she blows him up.
Okay.
I don't know how she gets outside and on top of that fucking chimney stack.
She gets on top of that entire chimney stack. It is like a 150-foot drop from where she is to where Sandman is. Sandman can morph, as we've seen.
Just leave.
He can dissipate. And leave. He's surrounded by sand. But instead, she lights a match, which drops in the air and stays lit for like it's like a 2-minute drop down that shaft. And Sandman is just looking up, just being like, "Whoop, guess I'm done for," which again, he has ample time to make a move and leave.
That scene was hilarious because I do feel like there's somewhere there's a cut of him like looking at the camera being like gulp
gulp.
It's so close to that, like you could fucking taste it while it's happening. You're like, this is about to fucking happen. This fucking guy. We then get a monologue from Megan, the girlfriend, as she spreads the ashes of her love, which I was hoping the Sandman would just like, how horrifying would that be? The ashes of your dearly departed turn into the Sandman?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen, though. But then we go to the site, we go back to the furnace where the Sandman died, and the fucking preacher is resurrecting him again through his ashes or glass.
Yeah, they were really hoping for...
They were really hoping for, what is this called? Sleep Stalker?
Yeah.
Who does he stalk in their sleep? Not a single person sleeping in this fucking movie. What are we talking about? Guy's lost his fucking mind. That's the end. That's the end. Sleep Stalker. 1995. A gem. A gem. Would you recommend it?
No. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I would say no. I would say just go watch something else.
Yeah.
It's just too long. You can't do this. It's also for free for those of you that want to watch it. Don't, though. Just go watch something else. Just go outside. You know? Get some fresh air. There were some good reviews. None of the 5-star reviews on Letterboxd had written reviews, unfortunately. But the fours and the fours and the halves. Four and a half. Oh, and speaking of a dear longtime listener of ours, gave this a rating of 3 stars. How do you feel about that rating? And I will reveal who the listener is. Don't go into it.
How do I feel about 3 stars? I mean, I could see you having fun with it. Okay. I didn't, but if you find it enjoyable, I think I can go with 3 stars. When you get to 4.5, that's...
4.5 is nuts. No, 4.5 is crazy. 4.5 is crazy. 4 is crazy. 3.5 is not great. 3 is teetering. 3 is teetering above the line for me. I would say 2.5, like, at most.
Oh, I give this 2. And that's generous.
Yes, 2 is a generous, good number. I'd say 2.5 is, like, my max on it. I can't see anyone going above a 2.5. Just the length and what actually happens and occurs in it is just minimal. That would be our friend. I wonder how many listeners are like, oh, fuck, did I review this movie? frantically checking their letterbox. It's our friend Dave A. from the Isle of Man in the UK. Oh. Gave it a 3. A glowing review.
Did he? Well, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Give him the well, you know, Joe, that would require me to have. I wrote down a bunch of other ones. Not this one. All right. Wait, here, I'll pull up Dave A's. Well, oh, also, I meant to mention he did it for Monster Vision Week in the Cult Cinema Challenge in 20. I don't know what year this is. It was a while ago, though. 2021.
Okay.
He did it for the Cult Cinema Challenge. What is it called? Cult Movie Challenge?
Yeah.
CMC.
CMC.
I'm honestly shook by how not awful this movie was. Everything about it. Should we be reading somebody's review? I don't know. Everything about it looks like it should be a cheap piece of horrible shit, but it surpassed all expectations. I'm with him. To an extent. I'm not shook.
Yeah. And listen, Dave has supported us.
Yes, we love Dave.
And I love Dave. I think he's a great guy. Yeah, shook. Maybe reconsider that term. But I did start off this episode by saying that I thought it was terrible, but also better than expected.
And like, things did look better than they should have in this movie.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it's got issues. The complete lack of on-screen kills and gore, the way the idiot leading lady holds a massive gun. Massive is in all caps. So you got your point there. Dropping a match about 40 feet and expecting it to still be lit, etc. Also, 40 feet, very kind. That is like a 200-foot drop. It's a giant smokestack. It's fucking
yeah, huge. I mean, he's converting, you know.
Oh, conversion, yes. Yeah, why is he using feet?
Room for error, you know.
Oh, 40 feet. Most of all, I love the fact that the main guy looks like someone turned the year 1995 into a human being. Wait, his tags are, he did the CMC tag, horror, Ken Foray, and goatee. That's a good review. I'm gonna like that review right now. So anyway, thanks for that, Dave.
Yeah, no, you know, when he spelled the way that he justified his rating, I'm fine with 3.
Yeah, stars. Yeah. Well, let's hear some 4.5 and fours, and let's see if you think these are justified.
They're not. You can save your breath.
Okay, 4.5. Iconic killer with a great look and a clear mythology around him. Why didn't this catch on? Is it the downer tone? The crappy name? Seriously, people should rediscover this one.
No. 4.5?
4.5. Okay. I'm an asshole. I think this one's a 4.5. The next one's... Oh, this one... This guy then does 8.5. Okay. Why do you put a 10 scale in a fucking website that is 5.
And then including a 0.5. Already
fucking killing me.
And disagree with this review.
That's not the next one. Next one is 4.5. It's a shame this movie didn't do well because the Sandman deserves a place next to Freddy and Jason as an epically creepy horror movie monster. 4.5. Yeah,
no. I disagree.
Can you imagine this guy thinking this guy belongs in the pantheon of like
the Mount Rushmore? Slashers?
Number 4. Or not number 4, rated 4. AKA 8.5 out of 10. So, whatever. 4. I used to love this film as a kid, and I must say, I don't know if it's nostalgia or what, but it really holds up for me. This film is a blast, and I don't know if there's a period in this. This film is a blast and really does have some creepy part and twisted stuff happening. I really enjoyed this film again. What a great rewatch. 8.5 out of 10.
I mean, 8.5 out of 10 is insane to give this. But out of the ones that you've read so far.
Yeah.
I think his is most justified.
Well, it's the most justified, but also he didn't have to talk about how much creepy and twisted stuff happens because that's not true.
Yeah. I was admitting it.
But yeah, otherwise, not terrible. Also, I was reading, because this next one's a 3.5, which is still a little too high for me, so that's why I included it. But this one, I haven't read it all the way, but I read some like sentences and I was like, fuck. Like, I forget how many people on Letterboxd are probably the Yumi and Pauls, but now we have access to Letterboxd and you're like a fucking 17 to 20 year old putting your reviews up, or even younger, actually, based on this review, I would say like 15 to 19 year old doing reviews on the internet, and you're like, oh fuck, like,
yeah, yeah.
That's what some of this is, and you can't like fucking knock these people. You could, yeah, I mean, we're having fun with this. We're having fun with this, but, and as we've pointed out many a times, my Letterboxd ratings are off the charts.
So. It's all good fun.
Sleep Stalker is a 3.5. Sleep Stalker is the rare exception to the oft reiterated internet theorem that most low budget 90s, I just looked over at your face, 90s horrors were pony. As for me, at least, this modesty marvelous DTV doozy rocked a little less timorously than you might have originally thought.
Shut up.
He's nuts. Turi Meyer's mythically menacing Sleep Stalker 1995.
Also, why is he using alliteration so much?
Dude, it's wild. It's fucking wild. Also features beloved horror icon Ken Foray as stoic Detective Rollins. 5 exclamation points after that. Hells, yeah, dude. Hells is a Z. Hell with a Z. Hells yeah, dude. While ultimately, also 5 exclamation points. While ultimately, also calling him stoic is nuts because.
Yeah, I agree.
Because one scene he's quiet and then the other scene he's just screaming at Griffin and it's great, but that's not stoic. While ultimately it's a cheap and skeevy shocker knockoff, it's got a deliciously dusted hoodoo voodoo terror twist in the tail. Right on. 5 exclamation points. Sandman's coming to dust more than your fucking eyes, baby. P-H-O-O-K-E-N. He's coming to come all over.
I was hoping his bloodstained lane right in it.
Joe, you might be onto something. I'm going to be honest with you. Because who else uses fucking giant words like this for no reason? And oh, exclamation, exclamation, exclamation. Yeah, exclamation. The deliciously rudimentary CGI scene is a legit double take gasser. While Sleepstalker is the frequently forgotten fright flick that can usually be found on a budget DVD collection with three other wholly unrelated, infinitely more grot-laden titles, its ignominious relegation to the B-horror dustbin of DVD doom is not entirely justified. That was nuts. I did not realize where we were going with that one.
Yeah,
that was the one that kind of reminded me of like high school writing reviews, but now I'm like, no, that's not nowhere near. That's not a thing.
that was nuts, dude. I'm gonna be nice and not say more, but that was nuts.
Joe.
Yes.
He has never. Oh, no, he has. But it's so low. He has 1,354 movies reviewed, rated. He has 9 at a half star, 4 at a 1 star, 8 at a 1.5, 9 at a 2. 13 at a 2.5, 26 at a 3. Okay. He has 228 5 stars, 426 4.5s, 344s, and 291 3.5s. Dude, fucking Joe Bob Brick.
I love doing that. Like, I have that music site that I log everything on. Yeah. And I love when I find accounts like that where it's like 9,000 5 stars.
How could that possibly be? You know what? I got to follow this guy. When was his last review? 13 hours ago. Good for him. The Mummy's Revenge. You know that one. You've probably seen that on. Fucking, what's his name?
Svengoolie.
4.5 stars.
Fair.
That's not fair.
It's not.
It's fucking nuts. Candyman, 3.5 stars.
Giving Candyman the same rating as this.
I mean, this is just as good as me. So, like, if for some reason this guy listens to the show, I love you. This is literally the same reaction I had to Joe reading mine. I think it's like the funniest shit to like see stuff like that. Just the like comparisons of things. Trog.
There's no, I know Trog.
Yeah. 4 stars.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way he listens to our show because he for sure would be pissed about the tangents and our ratings.
Yeah, that's true. All right, we're going to have to bring this over to Patreon for a little bit. Dude, pages and pages. Like, this is why it's better than mine, because my material runs out pretty quick. All right, that's that for this movie. We're not recommending it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Go waste your time doing something else. Pre-order the shirt, ihatehorror.com. Follow us. Join us over at patreon.com. Joe's doing his cult movie challenge. It's really fucking cool. You get a discount on the merch drop this month. We got the live show coming up. So come on over there and join us. patreon.com/ihatehorror. What was the last movie you did? I saw some people talking about it. What was it?
The last one was Peplum Week, which nobody likes that
What
one.
The fuck is
it? It was Hercules Against the Moon Men. It's Sword and Sandal.
That's what Sword Peplum is?
Craze. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just like Hercules or Samson movies. I don't know. Whoever chose that for Cult Week.
There were always a few weeks that you were just like, what the fuck? What are we doing here? It always drove me nuts a little bit, but that was also the fun of it. Forced you to watch.
That was the fun of it.
It's just when you realize, you know, hey, no one wants this one. Yeah. You know, skip it. But I don't know, maybe somebody likes it.
Huge Peplum fans out there.
this guy might be a huge Peplin fan. We're TBD. We're going to look through this, find out. So that's over at patreon.com. What are you doing this week? Do you know? Or are you doing one this week?
Yeah, it's Shaw Brothers. The
What are you going to do?
The Inframan. It is a fucking plus. Not to ruin my own bonus episode. I actually just recorded it today. It's a plus. It's one of the most fun movies I've ever seen.
Not super Inframan?
It has like 20 different titles.
Oh shit, this looks like almost like kaiju-esque.
1000% is. And it is so much like the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers TV show.
Right, right.
It's so fun. I might watch it again this week with my kids because they would love it.
That's interesting. All right, I might actually watch that. And maybe I'll do a point counterpoint. We can be Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp.
I like it.
Just scream at each other. Just make up a fake beef about it. Just take extreme stances. Inframan is the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire fucking life. So you can catch that over at patreon.com. We're going to record a little bonus tonight. And that's that. Facebook.com/IHateHorror, IHateHorror.com, Instagram @IHateHorror. Follow us over there and rate, review, and subscribe. Rate and review on iTunes or Spotify. Send me an email, Sean@IHateHorror.com, and we'll send you over some stickers. And with that, we will see you next week with, what's our next movie? Oh my God, I don't even know.
It's our live show.
Well, it's our live show, and then Communion we're going to do.
I thought the Communion was a live show.
No, we're going to... Oh, that's what I wanted to talk about on this episode, but you're going to have to tune into Patreon because this episode's over. Because we're going to discuss what we're going to do for the live show.
Okay.
Communion was going to be the last episode of March, my favorite March. I'm not watching Communion on a live show. I fucking fall asleep. Which also might not be our next
episode. So
why are we doing it? Well, yeah, that's just about to say. It might not be our next episode. We'll see. We're going to talk about it on Patreon, though. All right, guys. Thank you all so much. Appreciate you all. Thank you to Joe. And for Joe, this is Sean. Stay weird.
Thank you.
Adios. Fucking zombie getting sliced in.